Welcome to the Society for Biomaterials podcast.
We are very excited here to be with Lisa Kuhn, who is the new president of the U.S. Society for Biomaterials. I'm Tom Webster, the first past president of the society, and we had an idea to tape a podcast that will help us get to know Lisa better, understand what she has accomplished already for the society, and what her plans are going forward. So welcome, Lisa.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. It's great to be here. Thanks for agreeing to do this.
You bet. So we do have some questions, some maybe personal or career-oriented, and some more strategic for the Society for Biomaterials. But really, we're excited to get to know you through this podcast, Lisa.
Okay. Well, why don't I start by just telling everyone a little bit about myself, my background, and where I've worked. I'm currently a tenured associate professor in the Reconstructive Sciences Department in the School of Dental Medicine at the University of Connecticut Health Center. That's in Farmington, Connecticut. I'm also a core faculty member of the Biomedical Engineering Department, which is at the University of Connecticut Storrs campus. And the two campuses are about 30 miles away from each other, but we managed to make it work somehow, and I really enjoy being here at the health center because we have the hospital right here in the dental clinics, so I get a chance to be close to clinicians. I received my undergrad degree in mechanical engineering from Duke University, since they didn't have tissue engineering back in those days. And then before starting graduate school, I worked at General Dynamics in San Diego, working on stealth materials to prevent missiles and planes from being detected by radar. And then I decided I'd like to help humankind a different way than through military weapons. So I went to graduate school and completed a materials engineering degree at the University of California, Santa Barbara, with a professor, Bob McMeeking. Our field is so diverse. So some people may know of these mentors of mine, but other people, you know, it just really is a broad field. Still, I wanted to give them credit because I think our mentors really do shape us in ways that we don't really realize at the time. So for my graduate work, I helped derive constitutive equations, so mathematical equations that describe how powder consolidates. And why is that important? Well, it's a part of ceramic or metal powder processing. And these equations were used in finite element programs. And recently I attended a American Ceramic Society meeting and was thrilled to hear that someone actually used that equation. Once again, it was like a blast from the past to be reminded of that work, because that was a number of years ago. But so I started out in this very mechanical materials side of things, not biomedical, but it was through my postdoctoral training that I got to where I am now. And so first I had a postdoc with Arthur Hoyer. He's a ceramic materials person, and he's at Case Western Reserve University. And he had a collaborative project with Arnold Kaplan, who's of the mesenchymal stem cell MSC fame. And so that was how I first got exposed to cells and biomaterials at the same time. So I worked on biomineralization, trying to understand how seashells and eggshells form as guidance for understanding how to make tough ceramics, actually. So then, through Dr. Kaplan's connection to Dr. Melvin Glimcher at the Harvard Medical School and Boston Children's Hospital, I ended up moving from Cleveland to Boston to conduct work with Dr. Glimcher. So it was there that I learned the bone biology that is what I'm using now to design materials for orthopedic applications.
So, Lisa, if I could ask, I mean, you have such a fascinating background for eventually ending up at a university. And you could have taken, you know, this background in ceramics and materials processing and orthopedics, and you could have gone back to industry to use it. So I'm curious what governed your decision to be a professor, to go and use your knowledge in a university setting.
Interestingly, at the time I was working with Dr. Glimcher, I had the opportunity to start a company with him. So we were able to co-found and eventually sell a company developing bone graft substitutes using natural bone crystals. And Etex Corporation, also in Boston, acquired the company. And so then I went to work with them for a few years prior to joining the faculty. And it was really that chance of working in industry that helped me realize that I didn't want to be there, frankly. And here's why. For me, I found that I enjoy being able to follow my own research interests rather than having a board of directors decide, nope, we're not working on that anymore. You need to work on this because we need to make money for the company. So it was really, it's this, the intellectual freedom that we have here as being a faculty that has made me realize this is where my home is.
But what's great too is that I know your research very well and you've gotten to know you through the Society for Biomaterials, of course, through the years. You still seem to retain a little bit of the industry interest in standards, in regulatory processes, and it seems like you try to find a nice spot to weave that into your research. So I'm wondering if you could comment, on your interest with the regulatory processes, the standards processes that we need in biomaterials.
So, Tom, when I was working with Dr. Glimcher at the startup company, I realized that in order to most clearly define how our product was going to be different than other ones that were out there, that area of standards and the American Society of Testing and Materials standards in particular, which are related to medical products, was a great way to define unique characteristics of a product. And in case you weren't aware of this, the Food and Drug Administration looks to the American Society of Testing and Materials to help understand new technologies and realize what are important quality measures that they should be looking for. So I became involved at that time because Dr. Glimcher was somebody who had a passion for understanding what is natural bone mineral. And you'd think everyone would know what natural bone mineral is, but there's some controversy about whether or not it's really hydroxyapatite or whether or not it's actually a unique single phase of calcium phosphate or whether or not it's multiple phases. So long story short, it was through my involvement with that I realized that here's a place for a university professor or somebody at a company to be able to sit across the table and discuss what is it that's important about biomaterials, how does that relate to getting a good quality product that is going to be moved through the regulatory process faster in order to get to patients quicker. Being able to make that connection, that's why I've continued to remain involved with it, because as a faculty member working on one little area, it's hard to impact patients.
Right. Well, you definitely, Lisa, have taken a leadership role in incorporating these standards, developing new standards, especially in the orthopedic biomaterials community that I have seen. So I can see in your leadership style, you like to push forward, new ideas, new concepts. And I'm wondering, is that why you wanted to run for the president of the U.S. Society for Biomaterials?
Yeah, actually, pretty astute observation. I mean, I enjoy starting new initiatives. I also really enjoy talking to a number of people, getting a really broad perspective, and then trying to distill that down into, okay, what do we really know? That part about organizing professional activities, Society for Biomaterials was one of the first professional society meetings that I attended, in addition to the Orthopedic Research Society. But I've stayed with the Society for Biomaterials since 1997 because, in my case, our field and why I'm drawn to it continues to evolve and move into different areas. And so biomaterials for anti-cancer applications has been another area that I became fascinated with and worked on for a while. And the Society was there with programming that was attractive to me and interesting to me and a place where I could present my work. It's also, I guess I would say, my diverse interests in all things that are related to biomaterials that led me to keep staying involved in the Society for Biomaterials. So by the time I decided to run for president, I had been orthopedic SIG chair, I had been a session chair, symposium organizer, workshop organizer. I was actually the 2002 annual meeting overall program chair. I served on the membership committee, the awards committee. I was a drug delivery SIG chair. And then it was mainly through my role as the executive editor of the Biomaterials Forum where I became familiar and realized I like working with the people at association headquarters that run our society and as well as the other leadership there within the Society for Biomaterials. So we have a great team of leaders, past presidents like yourself, other past presidents that have stayed involved. So it's not something that I had to do on my own either. you know, I knew I was joining the team effort of people like-minded, interested in promoting biomaterials.
Right, yeah, and that, I think that camaraderie that our society has is really special and unique, as well as what you pointed out, the multitude of leadership opportunities that our members have to get involved, I think is special, and it's something that, that is unique about the Society for Biomaterials and what other societies are looking to us to mimic things like our special interest groups and our bottom-up approach to programming that, that again, I know of other societies that emulate that and are trying to mimic that now.
Yes. One of the initiatives that I've been working on since becoming president is the young scientists. We're not sure yet if it's a special interest group exactly or if it's going to just be part of the Education and Professional Development Committee. But what you just mentioned, the fact that we have openings for young scientists to come in and get involved with that programming, that organization, letting society be utilized to the best of its ability to help them with their professional development. And that was something that clearly I was able to do, and I want to make sure that path was open. So what we have is one person in particular, Cole DeForest. He's a faculty member at the University of Washington, and he's spearheading this effort at the World Biomaterials Congress. He volunteered to play that role, and I'm pleased because he's going to help ensure that our programming, as well as that there's a focal point for young industry members or young academic members to get into the society and be play an active role.
That's great. Yeah, and I know another one of your interests have really been on the global stage, right? As you remember, a year ago or so, you led a delegation of U.S. Society for Biomaterials members to China to really discuss, I think, standards and regulatory processes. And I wonder if you could comment a little bit more on your interest in the global stage of how the U.S. Society for Biomaterials can be a leader.
Yes. It was a privilege to be able to attend and be part of that group to China. I'd like to point out that Art Curry has played a big role along with some past presidents in terms of initiating that interaction we have with the Chinese Society for Biomaterials. So they set up a pre-meeting workshop that has, I think it's now in its fourth year, coming up now for this next meeting. And the goal there is to share our knowledge from both, and more particularly on the industrial product development side, and to look for opportunities in both countries. So from U.S. people looking at what are opportunities in China, and also to make our Chinese colleagues aware of what opportunities there are for biomaterials business ventures here in the United States. So that's an exciting program that will still be happening. You can look forward to that at our 2017 meeting. And also the other activity is we are the European Society for Biomaterials is made up of a number of different country activities, but they serve as the focal point. And we're interested in, and by me, I mean our liaison group led by Timmy Topolesky at the University of Maryland in Baltimore. He's playing a role in helping to look at how we can set up exchange programs more readily for graduate students looking for opportunities or postdoctoral students looking for opportunities or even for faculty looking for international collaborations. I believe our organizations are ideal for serving as a focal point for that activity.
So as you were alluding to, Lisa, even next week, I'm traveling, you know, on behalf of the Society for Biomaterials to South America, Colombia, to be specific, to strengthen our relationship with South America, the growing economies in biomaterials in South America, and think about how we can develop stronger relationships, exchange programs, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot globally that I think we are playing a leadership role in the U.S. Society for Biomaterials and can continue for many years to come.
Yes, and your interest, as I worked with you the year before I came president, you and I were on the same page about a number of activities, and I think that's you initiated this global outreach that is important for our society's growth as well.
Well, thank you. So if I could ask maybe a pretty poignant question, if we get out our crystal balls and we think of what biomaterials, whether it's education, research, regulatory policies, what these issues will look like in a decade from now, what are your thoughts?
What we're seeing now is incredible growth in the understanding of biological processes, for example, the advent of stem cells and the advent of viral reprogramming or non-viral reprogramming, rather. And the more that there's those breakthroughs happening in the biological side, that carries over to our field. So I see the materials of the future being much more patient-specific, age-specific, for example. That's one area I'm working on, is that as we understand difference between a young and old person, we're now in a position to tailor our biomaterials to interact better with that, for example, enhanced inflammation and slowed cellular processes. So I believe that our society will continue to exist and flourish because we've been the leaders in looking at cell biomaterial interactions. If you look at the work of our founders, they were looking at topics like biomaterial blood interactions or cell biomaterial interactions. So we'll just see more of that.
I agree. I think as our knowledge of how to develop materials and our knowledge of how biology responds to materials, that we're really moving into this era, continuing to move into this area of intelligent biomaterials, that I think the future is pretty bright for our field, both in interest as well as creating new materials that can last the lifetime of patients. So Lisa, this was great to talk to you in this podcast, to learn more about your background, and especially this very unique blend of industry and academics and standards, which you don't find much, unfortunately, in our field too much anymore. But I don't know if there's any final thoughts or things you want to say about the society.
At the 2017 annual meeting and exposition in Minneapolis, the theme for the meeting is where materials become medicine. And as we were just talking about the interaction of our members being composed of both industry leaders as well as academic leaders together, I think that tagline, where materials become medicine, is so accurate because by bringing together the various people around the table, both those from industry and academics, we can actually make products and have them become medicine.
Absolutely, and it's going to be a great annual meeting, I know it, with Lisa heading the effort as well as our programming committee and everybody else. I'm sure that this will really bring together industry and academics to the next level to help with biomaterial science.
Thank you for joining us on the Society for Biomaterials podcast. For more information, please visit biomaterials.org.